Well, the story of Lot has always been of interest for me. I've looked back. I gave a sermonette on it, and believe it or not, 15 years ago in 2007. And recently in club, had some ideas or thoughts on that as well this year. But it's always been a fascinating story for me that Lot, whom Peter describes as righteous, could first be drawn toward and then choose to live in such an ungodly society. Lot was then freed from that society temporarily, as the story goes on, but he chose to return. He finally was warned that God was going to destroy that society, and he was still slow to leave, having to be led out by the hand. We can also wonder how he would have offered up his daughters in order to appease the depraved crowd, if you recall that from the story. Well, today I'd like to look into the story of Lot. And as we do so, we will see some lessons that are important to us here today as we strive to serve God in our lives. We, too, live in a society that is becoming increasingly wicked. What do we need to be aware of to make sure we don't make the same mistakes as Lot? We'll look at four main lessons today. First, Lot didn't look to God's lead. Instead, he was guided by the physical. Second, Lot allowed himself to be drawn toward the allure of society, ultimately becoming enmeshed in it. Third, he was removed from that society, but he chose to return to it. And finally, when spared by God, he was not ready to go. He lingered. Let's begin by looking at the life of Lot and learning more about him. As we see at the end of Genesis 11, Lot is Abraham's nephew. Abraham had two brothers listed there, Nahor and Haran. Nahor was Laban's father of Jacob and Laban fame, and Haran was Lot's father. If you recall, God had to get Abraham out of his native country due to all the pollution of idolatry there in order to begin to work with him. And Lot came along with Abram on Abram's calling. Lot's father Haran died before Lot departed the Ur of the Chaldeans, which was the area of in Babylon there. And Abram and Lot left the land, it says, with all their possessions, including servants they acquired in the city of Haran. Let's pick up our story in Genesis 13:2. Abram had departed to Egypt. He had been brought to the land of Canaan out of Ur of the Chaldeans, and then they had gone to Egypt because of a famine. So now Abram had just left Egypt to go back to Canaan. Verse 2, Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. Let's drop down to verse 5. Lot also, who went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. Now the land was not able to support them, that they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. So they had so many animals that you can only have in such a space of land, they have to eat grass and so forth, and so it was just too much all right there. And also, as we see here in verse 7, and there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. The Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelt in the land. So they were kind of hemmed in because you had these other peoples that were living in this land, and then they were both trying to fit their thing in the land too. Verse 8, so Abram said to Lot, please let there be no strife between you and me, and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If you take the left, I will go to the right. Or if you go to the right, I will go to the left. So Abram had an attitude here of deferring and being very gracious and trying to get along. Verse 10, and Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So here Moses kind of kills, he kills the suspense a little bit. He tells us what's going to happen. I think we all know what was going to happen. It was well watered like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go towards Zoar. Then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in, and the NIV translates this as among, the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. So I think it's Barnes' commentary mentions that, so where they were, kind of in the central area of Judea, they would have been at a high point, and in this, towards the eastern part there of that land, you would have had the Sea of Galilee up north, the Jordan River snaking down, and then the Dead Sea, or the Salt Sea, they call it, below. And that area was very low, so I guess it was about 650 feet below sea level in the Sea of Galilee. Then it goes all the way to 1,300 feet below sea level where the Dead Sea is. So you would have had all the water in the area just kind of flowing down into this lush green area. So it must have been something to behold to be compared to the Garden of God. Both Abram and Lot, here we see, had great wealth. God was clearly working with Abram and led him to this land. So it's interesting to me that Lot doesn't defer here to his uncle, who's the elder, and who God is clearly working with. He makes the decision that's best for Lot. He saw the lush Jordan Valley. The plain was so lush, as we said, it was compared to the Garden of Eden. And Lot's eyes were drawn to the physical appeal of that land. And it seems that he didn't seek God's guidance in the matter of where, which direction he should go. He was attracted to that area because it was, again, best for him, best for his flocks and herds, and best for his growing estate. Often there are times in our lives where we have a choice of which way to go. When we come to those crossroads, what are the main criteria that we use to make that decision? Do we appeal to God to direct us for his greater plan that he has for us? Or do we simply look at what we think is physically best for us? If we lean toward the latter, we can find ourselves in places ultimately that we shouldn't be. Lot's focus seems independent of God's guidance, as I mentioned, focused primarily on the physical benefits and himself. So let's look at the next lesson. Lot allowed himself to be drawn toward the allure of society, ultimately becoming enmeshed in it. Let's pick up our story in Genesis 13, verse 12. Genesis 13, 12. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in, and as I said, the NIV translates, among the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. So Lot at some point became aware of these cities in the plain, and I think there's five cities that are mentioned, these cities in this plain. And his curiosity eventually moved his tents gradually closer and closer to Sodom. We're given the benefit of Moses foretelling that Sodom and Gomorrah was exceedingly wicked. Lot may not have known that initially. However, he must have eventually done some recon missions before moving in, I would think. What did he see? How was he greeted? What was the appeal to rejoin a society again instead of to stay on his own as kind of the model that God showed Abraham? We aren't told of Lot having a wife before he got to Sodom, so was that an appeal for him? Most likely that's where he found his wife. At some point, he would have had or seen inklings of the true nature of the society there. yet he chose to dwell there. In Isaiah 3:9, we're told that Sodom did not hide its sin. I imagine they would have been fairly transparent to Lot. Let's see a little more about the nature of Sodom by turning to Ezekiel 16, verse 49. Ezekiel 16, 49. The prophet Ezekiel is talking about the abominations of Jerusalem before the captivity. Look, this was the iniquity of your sister Sodom. She and her daughter had pride, fullness of food, and abundance of idleness. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. And they were haughty and committed abomination before me. Therefore, I took them away as I saw fit. So the Lord speaking about Sodom there. There would have been an appeal for someone that was wealthy and interested in position in society. There were plenty of goods and food. There was an abundance of idleness. There was leisure. That might have been a very unusual thing for someone that was used to dwelling with herds and flocks and dwelling in tents and moving along. We don't know at what point the abundance of idleness turned into full-blown pursuit of hedonism for Sodom. However, we do know from the later account in Genesis 19, as well as Jude's remarks in the New Testament, that it was bad. Jude says in Jude 1:7 that the cities around Sodom and Gomorrah were given over to sexual immorality. So they were all about it and went after strange or other flesh. Barnes describes it as unusual sin. They were doing what was contrary to nature. That society was engaged in open, lewd behavior in the face of God. At what point did Lot recognize that or become exposed to it? Was he able to avoid the abusive people when he first visited? Or was he greeted in the same perverse and violent way that the angels were treated when they visited? And therefore, left alone thereafter, possibly. We're not told. We do know that Lot was married and had children there. Two daughters were mentioned that were engaged to be married. So his life became enmeshed in Sodom. We no longer hear about his herds and flocks. What happened to all his herdsmen? Most likely they got swallowed up into that society as well. He must have at some point sold these things off for money and maybe invested in to Sodom. He had some type of an attraction to stay there. We too can become drawn in and enmeshed with the society we live in if we're not careful as well. We can become gradually exposed and inundated to ideas that are contrary to God's way until they seem normal or routine, like mass shootings, for instance. Who we now have that as more of a norm almost in society. It's becoming so frequent. We can be influenced by entertainment, music, and pop culture to think, feel, and behave certain ways. We can be pressured to accept and tolerate things we know to be wrong in order to not stick out. Society is slowly squelching the voices of those who don't go along with popular thinking. We can also begin prioritizing things in the same way that society does. We can become attached to money in an unhealthy way. We can be drawn to the sexuality of pop culture, especially for young people. We can become so busy with life's cares that it squeezes out our focus from God. Where are we pitching our tents? Are they moving towards Sodom and society? Or are they moving steadily in the direction that God wants us to go? Lot's tents moved towards Sodom. And when he got there, he allowed himself to be drawn in. Next in Lot's life, we see another lesson for us today. Lot was removed from that society forcibly, but he chose to return to it. Let's pick up that story in Genesis 14, verse 1. Genesis chapter 14, verse 1. A little bit of a lengthy passage here. And it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Shador-Lamor, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, that they made war with, and rather than go through all five of these kings, these are the cities of the plain that I mentioned earlier, Sodom, Gomorrah, Admah, Zeboim, and Bela, which is also called Zoar, which was at the end of the story where Lot wanted to go instead of the mountains where he was directed. Verse 3, all these joined together in the valley of Siddim, that is the Salt Sea. So there was going to be a showdown between these two different sets of kings, these two nations. Verse 8, and the king of Sodom, and again that goes through the kings, they went out to battle against Shedolamor, which they said they rebelled against him, so I don't know what he had over them. They were paying tributes to him if he was demanding that or whatever the situation was. But these five kings, including the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah, they were rebelling against this Shedolamor, which would make a great cheese, it sounds like. I don't know. Now, the valley of Siddim was full of asphalt pits, and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled. Some fell there, and the remainder fled to the mountains. Then they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their provisions and went their way. So they were plundered here. Verse 12. They also took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. Then one who had encamped came and told Abram the Hebrew, for he dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshol, the brother of Arner, and they were allies with Abram. So Abram had some buddies, some allies that told him what was going on, told him what happened to Lot. Now when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his 318 trained servants who were born in his own house and went in pursuit of Dan. That's right. So Dan was up in the north. So they were ready to pursue and overtake here and bring things back. Verse 15. He divided his forces against them by night, and he and his servants attacked them and pursued them as far as Hobah, which is north of Damascus. That sounds like it might be a nice town in Jersey, Hobah. Verse 16. So he brought back all the goods and also brought back his brother Lot and his goods, as well as all the women and the people. So Lot here was taken captive. He was removed from Sodom, and then he was freed by his uncle Abram. Phew, that was a close one, right? Well, now surely Lot would take this opportunity to relocate after a big event like that, or maybe reassess his situation. He might take his possessions at that point and get out of Sodom, right? That would seem logical. But unfortunately, that's not what Lot did. Lot took his possessions and returned to Sodom. The prophet Isaiah speaks of the coming salvation for Jerusalem in Isaiah 52:10. He brings up how those who are freed by the arm of the Lord should react. I'll read Isaiah 52:10 through 12 here. The Lord has made bare his holy arm in the eyes of all the nations. So that's made bare your holy arm. That's strength. And all the ends of the earth shall see the salvation of our God. Depart, depart, go out from there. Touch no unclean thing. Go out from the midst of her. Be clean, you who bear the vessels of the Lord. For you shall not go out with haste, nor go by flight. For the Lord will go before you, and the God of Israel will be your rear guard. So the response here that God tells the future Jerusalem to have when they are freed by the strong arm of the Lord is to get out of the unclean place, there to depart. Paul echoes that in 2 Corinthians 6:14. We're probably very familiar with this verse. 2 Corinthians 6:14, he says, "Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? What communion has light with darkness? And what accord has Christ with Belial? Or what part has a believer with an unbeliever?" And then dropping to verse 17, "Therefore come out from among them and be separate, says the Lord. Do not touch what is unclean, and I will receive you." So this is true for each of us today as Christians. We have been freed from the bondage of sin of our life before we were called. The strong arm of the Lord prevailed in our lives at that time to free us and bring us out of our captivity. Is our response to depart and get out of where we have been, to not see it again, is it to be separate from the society that we live in? Or will we plant ourselves back into the same familiar position we were in before being freed? Paul in Galatians 5:1 is speaking about bondage and freedom. Galatians 5:1, I'll read it for you here. "Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty by which Christ has made us free, and do not be entangled again with a yoke of bondage." So we're not to become entangled once more into the type of life that we had before we were freed. Lot willingly returned to a type of bondage and oppression. Let's see how Peter describes Lot's situation by turning to 2 Peter 2, verse 4. 2 Peter 2, verse 4. Peter is talking about God's judgment not slumbering here. 2 Peter 2, 4. "For if God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment, and did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah, one of eight people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood on the world of the ungodly, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them to destruction, making them an example to those who afterward would live ungodly, and delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked." So there, here it's describing Lot here as being oppressed. He was a captive here of sorts. "For that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. Then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust under the punishment for the day of judgment." So this is the part that doesn't make sense. It's not like Lot was participating in the sins of Sodom. He was actually tormented by it. So why then would he return to it when given the chance to get out? It's possible that it hadn't gotten that bad there yet. After all, 10 years has made a major difference in morality in this country. A decade ago, neither party was in support of homosexual marriage, let alone embracing non-binary gender issues. Criminal violence and open-air drug use wasn't condoned in the same way then as it's being now. Full-term or post-birth abortions were crime 10 years ago. Societal morality can make drastic moves over short periods of time, and at the same time, appear quite gradual. We should not allow ourselves to accept these changes as normal in our thinking. Regardless, Lot had a chance to depart, and he chose not to. Let's look at the next lesson of Lot. Don't linger, be ready to walk away. At the end of Genesis 18, the one who became Jesus Christ, along with two angels, met with now Abraham, whose his name was changed to. And at the end of that meeting, the Lord revealed that the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah had become so great that action had to be taken. Abraham asked the Lord, "Would you also kill the righteous with the wicked?" The Lord said he would spare Sodom if there were 10 righteous there. Let's pick up the story in Genesis 19, verse 1. Genesis chapter 19, verse 1. Now the two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he arose to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. So Adam Clark's commentary here says the following about Lot sitting at the gate of Sodom. Quote, "Sat in the gate, probably in order to prevent unwary travelers from being entrapped by his wicked townsmen. He waited at the gate of the city to bring strangers he might meet with to his own house." So Lot was most likely trying to do good here and actually strengthen the hand of the needy, as it said that society didn't do. Clark also theorized that the gate of the city was also a place of judgment. So it was a place where judges would often hear disputes and rule on matters. And as you remember, those in Sodom complained that Lot kept acting as a judge over him, if you recall that. So let's pick up the story in verse 2 here, Genesis 19. And he said, "Hear now, my lords, please turn into your servant's house and spend the night, and wash your feet. Then you may rise early and go on your way." And they said, "No, but we will spend the night in the open square." But he insisted strongly, so they turned in to him and entered his house. Then he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. Now, before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both old and young, and all the people from every quarter surrounded the house. And they called to Lot and said to him, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may know them carnally." Notice that both the old and the young men gathered here for the depravity. And it says all the people of every quarter surrounded the house. So there were no late night cable movies back then. There was no internet porn. The society was interested in witnessing firsthand the worst type of depravity as entertainment. As a side note, our society is rapidly moving that direction. In a Newsweek article from November 16th of 2020 by Terry Schilling, titled "Science Says Porn is a Huge Problem. Lawmakers Must Stop Ignoring It," the author says the following, quote, "As with any addiction, more and more is required to satisfy the craving. Porn users quickly become desensitized to everyday vanilla sex. In online pornography, everything becomes fetishized, and the taboo becomes commonplace. Pornography has become increasingly violent as well. As one 2016 study paper he refers to relates, a mainstream commercial pornography has coalesced around a relatively homogeneous script involving violence and female degradation. Studies find that up to 88% of the most popular pornographic videos contain physical violence, and 49% contain verbal aggression. This isn't anything like your father's Playboy." End quote. Where will this trend progress 10 years from now? Will it stay in people's basements? Or will it graduate to public exhibition? Verse 6 of Genesis 19. So Lot went out to them through the doorway, shut the door behind him, and said, "Please, my brethren, do not do so wickedly. See now, I have two daughters who have not known a man. please let me bring them out to you, and you may do to them as you wish. Only do nothing to these men, since this is the reason they have come under the shadow of my roof." So it's unfathomable that a father would make this offer. Obviously, Lot was not relying on God to solve the problem that was in front of him. He was relying on his own thinking. This reinforces the first point that we talked about today. Little did he know that he actually had angelic protection there already. My belief, giving Lot the benefit of the doubt, is that he knew the men weren't interested in women. They wanted strange flesh. He may have thought his offer would buy some goodwill in order to appease the crowd without anyone acting on it. Regardless, it wasn't Lot's finest moment. The angels pulled Lot to safety inside the house and blinded the aggressors. The angels let Lot know God's intent to destroy the city. They told him it was time to get out of this place. Lot went to warn his future sons-in-law, but they laughed at him, supposing he was joking. Let's pick up the story in verse 15, Genesis 19, 15. When the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, "Arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city." And while he lingered, the men took hold of his hand, his wife's hand, and the hands of his two daughters. And the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him, out and set him outside the city. So after seeing exactly what that society was made of, and being told explicitly that God was going to destroy that society, Lot still lingered. He had to be grabbed by the hand by angels to head out. Maybe he was waiting for his future sons-in-law possibly to join him. But at that point, what would cause anyone to linger? What would cause us to linger when it's our time for us to leave this society? I believe Lot lingered because he was not ready. God's judgment on mankind with the great flood was not that long before. Surely he was aware of it. Yes, God promised not to flood the earth again, but he didn't promise to not intervene in mankind's affairs. A type of judgment had already befallen Sodom when Lot was taken captive. Didn't Lot stop to think that that might have been more than just chance? That might have been a warning? The actions of society would have continued to devolve from that point. Surely he didn't think God would turn a blind eye to it forever. What about you and I today? Do we believe that God will ultimately act in regard to the morality of this society? It's a popular thought in the church today that prophetic events will not happen in our lifetime, by some. Of course, only God knows the day and the hour. But you and I, are we mentally prepared to walk away? Or is that idea so foreign to us that if the time comes, we would linger? What might cause us to linger? Our family relationships, maybe grandbabies or unconverted grown children, our careers, our money or our property. For those who are younger, the pursuit of education and going after your own life. Possibly fear of our own physical lives. How about the spiritual preparedness to do so? Lot most likely was not ready spiritually. As the Apostle John writes in 1 John 2, this world is passing away. Lot didn't understand that his world was passing away until the angels declared it to him. He was not discerning the times. We have to make sure that we are discerning the times. Let me read you Christ's words from Christ's words from Mark 13:28, regarding discerning the times. Mark 13:28. Now learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branch has become tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. There are very specific things that have to occur before the Great Tribulation. This refers to that. But before then, we need to discern what is happening in our society morally, and we also have to discern events happening in our world today. I'm not sure how many of you saw this week, but Germany has begun to ration its energy usage because they're concerned about Russia cutting off their natural gas supply this winter. They're limiting how long and when you can shower. They're turning off traffic lights at night. They're not illuminating public buildings any longer. They're limiting when you can use your air conditioner and what temperature you can put it at. The Nord Stream pipeline is currently shut down for 10 days for maintenance, but many Germans fear it won't reopen. Italy is only getting half of the natural gas it needs from Russia right now. Russia is doing more to unite Europe than we have seen since the Berlin Wall came down. The government of Sri Lanka collapsed this week over energy and food shortages. Many nations in the developing world are beginning to face food scarcity because no grain has come out of those ports of Ukraine since the war began. And many of the developing nations are the ones that rely on it. When people don't have food or energy, stability erodes quickly. More radical actors move in. Hitler's rise came amidst out of control inflation in the environment after World War I. There are leaves budding on the trees. Let's contrast this idea of lingering versus readiness. Turn with me, if you will, to Luke 17, verse 26. Luke chapter 17, verse 26. Earlier in this passage, the Pharisees asked about when the kingdom of God would come. Let's see what Christ says later to his disciples. Verse 26. And as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be also in the days of the Son of Man. They ate, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all. Likewise, as it was in the days of Lot, they ate, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they built. But on the day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even so will it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. In that day, he who is on the housetop and his goods are in the house, let him not come down to take them away. And likewise, the one who is in the field, let him not turn back. Remember Lot's wife. Jesus tells us that things will happen quickly when it's time. He tells us that we need to be ready. There is not one thing we can linger over when that time comes. Lot lingered. His wife looked back. Are we ready to walk away from what we have? Are we spiritually reliant on God now in our lives to be prepared to make that choice when it comes? Our time to prepare and make ourselves ready is now. And part of that preparedness is understanding just how quickly things can happen. But Noah's society and Lot's society had a lot of time to progress before God acted. God gave Noah's society 120 years of notice. Lot must have watched Sodom's deterioration for roughly about 2 decades. During that time, things happened slowly, almost immeasurably. However, there came a time for both Noah and Lot when it was go time. Noah had his boat completed when go time hit. Lot did not seem to be fully prepared or even aware that his time had come. We have to be ready for our time. Let's see Paul weigh in on readiness by turning to Romans 13, verse 11. Romans 13, verse 11. And do this, knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep. For now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Therefore let us cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. Our salvation is absolutely closer for each of us than when we first believed. For some of us, when we first believed, it's been 5 or 6 decades probably. But for each of us, our salvation is nearer, or is as near, as our last heartbeat or breath, or possibly our next heartbeat or breath. None of us knows that day or hour either. However, it will come for each of us at some point. And at that moment, we each have to be spiritually ready, regardless of when Christ's return is. Paul's recommendation is that we work actively to put on Christ now. As Christ tells us in Matthew 25:10, in the parable of the virgins, those who were ready went in with the bridegroom to the wedding. There is much to learn from the lessons of Lot for Christians today. First, we learn that we each need to look to God for our guidance in life, to be led to where He wants us to be, and not to lead ourselves by our eyes or by our desires. Second, we learn that we need to be careful not to move our tents toward the allure of society and become enmeshed in it. Third, we recognize that each of us was freed from our bondage to society by God, and as a result, we cannot choose to return to it. And finally, we can learn that we need to be ready to go when it's our time to go. We can't linger. Instead, we have to be ready to depart, whether that's when Christ returns or when we draw our last breath. Brethren, the society we live in is getting worse rapidly, but slowly enough to have an influence, possibly, on God's people. Let's see it for what it is clearly, discerning the times, and prepare by putting on Christ.